Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast, the original K-State sports show. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to the Power Cat Podcast. I am Fitz, running solo again, kind of enjoying these, taking your questions from Wabash Station. If you're not familiar with the Power Cat Podcast, I've been doing this for, oh heavens, 15 years or so. And we take questions from our subscribers, our VIPs at GoPowerCat.com. We hop on over there and check out the specials of the day. We always have something cooking for you. And they get to ask questions, but everyone gets to watch or listen. Let's do some housekeeping real quick before I get to the questions from Wabash Station. We had a power outage the other night, pretty bad storm. The ball may never be the same. So it's going to be distracting you throughout the show. It's blue. It's in caught in the rotating mode. I can't get it to stay on the lavender. It's sad. I might have to find something new. Heartbreaking. Also, you might have noticed I haven't been as visible lately. I've been going through some stuff. Nothing serious. If you don't know, I've got stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer. A few months ago, I had a bladder bleed that led to some issues and some real concerns and did some extra damage beyond what I've been fighting. And then I had a stomach bug, and I haven't felt well for a good 2 months. And so I've been laid up a lot, not very motivated because you don't feel well. But I'm kind of getting there. And here we are. Appreciate all the thoughts and prayers. I turned 62 on June 1. They said I wouldn't see 60. So we're going to go to Colorado with some friends and celebrate. So it's going to be a little quiet around the first week of June because little did I know, Ryan Gilbert has a family vacation. We'll get it covered. Don't worry about that. But now it's time to take your questions from Wabash Station. And I appreciate all of you who give questions over at Wabash Station. I got to tell you, honestly, you guys have done an incredible job of asking really deep questions, really good questions, really, you know, if you're going to run a solo podcast, these questions have been really ideal. And in the off season, you don't get a lot of X's and O's type things. You get theoretical stuff. And I think we got some really good stuff. However, I want to shout out our longtime star at Wabash Station, I Like Pickles Cat, for asking a question so in-depth, so commanding of intelligence that I passed. Honestly, my late May brain kind of started to steam a little bit and smoke, and I couldn't tell the difference because I'm a sports writer. So I passed. Pickles asked that question a little bit later, maybe closer to football season, when I'm ready to go in depth. It's blue now. Let's get going, though. I did get one from Pickles, though. I did. There's one in here. Get more out. Cat starts us off with, what's with the sympathy we're seeing for Brendan Sorsby? If players can gamble on their own games, shouldn't we shut the whole thing down? Yes, I agree. I don't get it. This used to be one of those things that every fan understood. If you bet on sports, you're not going to be able to play. If you bet on the game in which you play, college football, it's worse. If you ever bet on your own team, and I don't care if it's college, pro, highlight, anything. Well, highlight they did. It's fixed. Anything. You're done. That used to be set in stone, and every fan understood it. I want to go deep here and say this is a comment on society now, that whatever I want to do, I can do that. And if that includes betting on football on my own team, well, that's fine if he did it too, because I might do that. You cannot tolerate this. This has to be zero tolerance. And if a court decides it's going to uphold some kind of appeal from the Sorsby group to let him play, shame on that judge. This is, you can't allow this. I remember when this broke and everyone kind of around him or Texas Tech fans or whoever it was, he's bet on a few things. It turns out this dude was betting on European random events, women's tennis. I mean, just all kinds of stuff that there's no way he had knowledge of all these sports. So he was addicted to it. He was caught up in it. And going to counseling doesn't help. He has come out, he's bet on his own team, even though he wasn't playing. He was on the team at Indiana. He always bet for his team to win, which wasn't good betting at that time, but still. once you bet on your own team and you're on the team, you're done. You're done. He is ripe to be picked off by people that want to fix games or who want inside knowledge, who want to know who's injured at all the times. That's really what a lot of gamblers want. They don't want it fixed as much as they want to know what's going on. Oh, we don't have a good game plan. We're, you know, that type of thing. Oh, the quarterback's hurt. Nobody's talking about it. Those insider things are enormous in sports betting because the margin between succeeding and failing is very thin. Well, a lot of people fail, me included. The good ones, though, are really cognitive of all these little things, and on occasion, they get little tips. The quarterback is betting on his own team, makes him very vulnerable to these people. No, he can't play college football. And shame on an NFL team that would draft him. This isn't personal. I'm not out to get Brendan Sorsby. But decisions have consequences. Actions have consequences. You break the rules, it comes with a punishment. And sometimes that punishment is the end of your career as you know it. Maybe Brendan Sorsby, in all seriousness, needs to roll with this and become a football sports gambling expert, move to Vegas and start dishing out advice. He knows his football. He knows his gambling. And yeah, he could probably give some European horse racing props that would hit. I don't know. I had to give it up. I suck at it. He apparently isn't real good at it. I feel for the kid. You know, addiction's a weird thing. I really got angry with someone on YouTube comments. Sports gambling is not physically addictive. If you stop, you don't go through physical withdrawals. Okay? They say, well, if it's your brain, it's physical. It's not how it works. I'm talking about alcoholics could die from stopping drinking. Drug addicts, too. You go into withdrawals, and it's horrible. You don't do that with sports gambling. You don't do that with marijuana, by the way. You don't do that with a lot of things. It's mentally addicting, but not physically addicting. He can get over this. He can solve this problem if he wants to. That's the key to solving addiction. My friend D. Scott Fritchin, D, I can't remember what years you, 10 years? Did you say you're dry? You're sober? That's the real deal, man. He sought help. And I knew one of the things about D. Scott is he's got one of the strongest wills you'll ever see. And alcohol devoured him. But when it was time to stop and he recognized it was time to stop, he got help. And by God, he stopped on the first try. That I admire tremendously. This is unfortunate because here's the thing. I still don't think he gets it. He's appealing. He wants to play. I know you want to play, but why don't you understand that this was the bridge too far? You knew you shouldn't be sports betting. You knew that. Every student athlete knows it. And let me say this, if Indiana and Cincinnati didn't tell him these things, then they need to be investigated for a lack of institutional control. And if either school knew he was doing it and still let him be on the team, they need to face some serious sanctions. That opens you up to great damage in the sports betting area. There has to be zero tolerance here, whether it's from the school, the coach, the NCAA, the conference, or judges. But right now, we also live in a world in which you can always shop around and find the right judge to have the right opinion, even if the opinion makes no sense. Sad. Looks like dude's coming into the studio right now. I like Pickles Cat. There you go. How much influence did Chris Kleiman have on the offense for Klein's run as OC? That's a great question. You know, one of the things I find fascinating about coaches, head coaches, is generally they're from one side of the ball or the other. Once in a while, there's a Frank Gantz that was special teams. Don't start me. But if you're an offensive coach, you give a lot of grace and power to your defensive coaches. That's kind of who you want to work for. If you're a defensive coach, you want to work for Bill Snyder. Bob Stoops, Bob Cope, Mike Stoops, Phil Bennett. Just keep going down the list. There's been some great defensive coaches, but they ran the show on that side of the ball. Did Coach Snyder have input? Of course he did. Did he say, this is what you need to do as it fits into the greater game plan? Yeah. And I'm sure that's what Chris Kleiman did with his touches on offense. Coach Kleiman was a defensive coach, and he was very interested in the defensive side of the ball. So he empowered his offense coordinator to do things. But the thing is defensive coaches probably have more thoughts on offense because what the offense does so greatly impacts the defense. If you get into a shootout, all of a sudden the defense is sucked into it too. So, yeah, I think there was probably some guidance there. But Chris Kleiman was also a guy that would let his coaches coach, go do the thing. And that was kind of cool. I imagine he had some input, but also that Colin Klein did his thing. And I'm really looking forward to him returning to doing his thing because he'll still be calling plays. I don't know about you folks. And maybe this is why I'm not dreading summer. I always look forward to summer because it is my downtime. It's the only time we can vacation, those things. But there's a little, it's not anxiety. That's not the right word. It's excitement. I can't wait for football. I want to see how this manifests itself. Because I have a feeling this could be a really good team. I'm really impressed with the coaches. The schedule is very welcoming, as I've mentioned on Daily Deliveries. In fact, if you had to map out a new schedule for Colin Klein to succeed, it would probably look a lot like this one. You don't play the top three teams as projected according to odds in the conference, and you are the fourth team. You do play the worst three teams, and they're all on the road. It's a really advantageous schedule. I want to get there and see how it all unfolds. And if you're a K-Stater, it comes with this feeling that it will not go quite as planned. And we got a question that plays into that in a little bit. Did I put them together? Yes, I did. El Camino Cat, what was your golden era of K-State sports? He wants a year? No, an era isn't a year. An era is a string of years. Well, the history of Kansas State athletics tells us that doesn't exist. Now, it might be sad to say Kansas State sports has never had a golden era, but that's my belief. Because until Bill Snyder came, with the exception of a few seasons, football sucked. You can't have a golden era of college athletics without a good football team. So now we just eliminated approximately 100 years. There were some good years in there, but again, it takes more than 1 year to be an era. It's kind of like those winning streaks. Got to have three. That's a streak. And then football got really good. And basketball wasn't. I don't know. I mean, Lon Kruger left in part because the commitment to football was so sizable and the money and the attention and the fan enthusiasm all kind of turned to football. So that doesn't work. And football dipped and basketball came up and dipped. No, we've never had that. Now, you can say 2012 when the school won a Big 12 championship in football, men's basketball, and baseball, that's pretty damn awesome. And that didn't carry through. It wasn't an era. It was a good year. I'll tell you what, let's have that era. I'd like to see that era. I think these coaches, at least football, basketball, are presenting some real opportunities here for success. I'm very optimistic. I'm as optimistic about things as I've been in a long time. I got to admit, I felt pretty good in Jerome Tang's first year. I love the man. I thought he had the plan, and I was wrong. I was wrong. Meanwhile, football was doing pretty well. But it's my thought that Colin can take the football program back to a level that we haven't seen in a while since Bill Snyder was really cooking. in his 1.0. And basketball needs a steady hand at the wheel. Needs someone who does it the K-State way. We'll get into that in a little bit. Next up, how do you see the load being distributed for the running back room? This is, what is it, Deal Gratis 365? I like it. Okay, so let me just set something aside here. Montario Elston, I think you're going to have opportunities this season. I think you're going to have chances, and maybe injuries will bring that on even more, to be on the field. You're good enough to be on the field. But this running back room is as good as I remember. K-State's always had an ability to have the one guy and then a backup. When K-State was really good in 98, they had a couple guys. In fact, they had three guys. And that was really deep. None of them were overwhelmingly good, just rock solid. And there wasn't much drop off. This group could be really good. We saw what Joe Jackson became by season's end last year. His confidence blossomed. He started running with a physical presence we hadn't seen and hitting holes and accelerating in a way that we also hadn't seen. Confidence is a beautiful thing. Joe's a junior. I expect him to be the starter, at least in game one. I think he could start the whole season, because if it's really close, if it's competitive at that position, you're going to start him. He's proven he can do it. But Jay Harris, the transfer from Oregon, who originally came from Northwest Missouri State, is apparently unbelievable. That might be too far. Impressive. Let's go there. 6'1", 215. When he walked in the interview room, he looks more like 6'1", 235. Not because he's fat, but because he's lean with all muscle. He's put together in a way, and he's not the only one on this team that's this way, that we haven't seen much in covering Kansas State sports. He looks the part. And apparently he played the part. Didn't play much at Oregon. I don't know why, but is their running back room really that good? Or did he just not fit the offense? I think these coaches will find a role for him and make sure he's on the field. So now we've got two bigger guys. K-State's known for the little guy, the overachiever, the one who others pass on, but his speed, quickness, and evasiveness always makes him really effective in the college game. But Jackson and Harris are a little bit different, too. And so I'll be interested to see how the coaches use those two in unison with each other. They put them on the field together. And you get to Rodney Fields Jr., who I absolutely loved at Oklahoma State. You can see those sparks. You could see him. Now, he missed spring football due to injury, so he's a little bit behind. But he is the little guy at 5'8", 5'9", 183. I don't even think he's that big. But you know what? I'm excited to see him. Those are three really good running backs. If I told you Rodney Fields Jr. were going to be the starter this year, you would probably go, good, he's good. That's awesome. He might be third string. It means this running back room is about as good as we've seen it in a very long time in Manhattan, Kansas, if they stay healthy. And we'll see how that pans out. But, if you're going to run the quarterback, your running backs have to be a threat. A legitimate threat. And that's just the truth. L. Roberson had a Darren Sproles. L. was never that fast or, that powerful, but he could find the hole, and everyone was worried about Sproles. So we'll see if these guys can keep everyone on the other side really honest about things. Next up, what do we got? Mr. Paints. I think you've asked a question, at least not recently. At what point does Kansas State need to worry about its spending to keep up with the wealthiest college sports entities, ultimately causing insolvency? Dude, this is a great question. This is something that I worry about. This is something I brought up, and a lot of people freak out when I bring it up. At some point, a lot of institutions, Kansas State included, might have to make the decision of where they want to be as an athletic institution. And everyone's immediate answer is the highest level possible. But when it becomes about money, and you're an ag and engineering school that usually has about 21,000 students, you're going to find it really hard to compete with Nebraska, Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, most of the powerful schools in the SEC, Oregon, Washington, a lot of Big Ten schools. There's also a lot of schools in the Big Ten and SEC that probably should consider the same thing as Kansas State needs, will have to consider, but won't, because they'll have an invitation to the super conference if it ever comes to pass. I'm not sold it will be, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really help the TV properties to blow up half of college football. Not really blow up, but diminish it. Doesn't help. And I don't think it'll work. I think they're under the impression that everyone's going to sit at home and say, I'm going to watch some SEC football today because it's so good. No, no, people won't. They might do it now because you're part of the club. You're part of the league, the greater division of power football conferences. So you watch to compare and to contrast and to understand where your team actually fits into the world of college football. If you leave and join your own thing, and we're no longer competing, we're no longer watching, we won't care. Most of us. Some of you are just the Brennan Sorsby of TV watching. You'll watch any game anytime. And that includes probably some high school sports if it comes on a Friday night. So the real situation here is that Kansas State can't keep up in this current environment. It's having problems keeping up in 2026. Folks, if this doesn't get any kind of regulation or guidelines, barriers, most schools aren't going to be able to keep up. If you don't have billion-dollar donors willing to give money, you won't be able to keep up. And how long will the billion-dollar donors do it? Particularly if they're giving and not winning. This is unsustainable at every level. And that's the thing. Eventually, the Super League will come in with salary caps or whatever. They'll sign some type of collective bargaining probably and run a semi-pro football league. But paying quarterbacks $5 million for one season of college football is not only unsustainable, it's idiotic, especially when it turns out Brennan Sorsby had a huge flaw. And let's be honest, he's good. He's not that good. But he was the best available in the marketplace. That's how the market works. And Texas Tech spent a lot of money. Do you want to be a program that really isn't equipped to compete on a year-in, year-out basis? This is not Major League Baseball. Don't give me this, oh, Tampa Bay, the Royals won the World Series. You don't have multi-year contracts. You can't retain and lock up players. Every year, players are going to come and go. If you have success, you're gone. You're going to get an offer you can't refuse. So it's not the same thing. It'll be impossible for schools to compete when those you compete with can easily raid your roster based on finances. So if there's a middle being between what we call the power conferences and the non-power conferences, if there's a middle existence, is that where Kansas State belongs? Iowa State, Oklahoma State, some other states, a lot of the Big 12 schools. Do you want to compete at the highest level if the highest levels exceed your ability to compete financially? It's going to be a really interesting discussion for Kansas State as a university, because how does that reflect on the university and enrollment and those things? And as a fan base, and as the donors who will be asked to pay the bill. A lot of us are like, yeah, we want to compete at the highest level. I don't have any money to add. Someone else can do that. Those someone else's are going to gain a lot of power and will play a big role in deciding if the answer is yes or no. Honestly, I think the answer is no. But I don't want to say that, and I just did. I hate that North Dakota State's moving up. I do. I do. And they've been so dominant, and now they won't be able to sustain it. They might absolutely run the Mountain West or whatever conference they're in, but I think they'll see a drop off because they're going to start taking L's. They will, at a level that their fans have never seen, at least in recent memory. And not dominating every game. They're going to be toe-to-toe in a lot of games and get worn out and get beat up. And the stress at this level's a lot higher. Honestly, I think Chris Klieman discovered that. He went from being Alabama of the FCS level to being Kansas State. You can win. It's not as easy. Cat and Kahlo. Hey, brother, I'm coming your way here in a couple weeks. Going to Breck to celebrate 62. So leave me alone. But if you're nearby, I'd love to see you. We have two new high-profile coaches in Klein and Alexander. Everyone likens Klein to Snyder. Which past K-State coach is Alexander most like? First, Casey Alexander's a quality person, but business. It's too early to probably assess who he is. I haven't really seen him coach. I've heard about what he does. I'm not reviewing film of his games. I'm sorry. Ryan Gilbert, get on that. I think if he's successful, I think if he's flourishing at Kansas State, it'll be because he's like Jack Hartman. Able to get good players. Let's not say that he just coached everyone up. Rolando Blackman was special, and they brought him in. They got him, and he made him more special. But almost every player Jack Hartman touched during his heyday got better, extremely better. And his teams were perfectly cut out. Everyone on that floor knew their role, knew their strengths, their limitations, when they were supposed to shoot, if they were supposed to shoot, and if they did shoot, it better be the last resort. Understanding how all the pieces on the chessboard work together seems easy, but in watching basketball now at the college level, it's apparently more difficult. And the coaches that can do it, including a guy in Lawrence named Bill Self, have an advantage. I suspect Casey Alexander is going to be closer to that. There'll be no like losing games because of poor fundamentals and not knowing how to shoot or pass or dribble. They're going to be well designed. And if you listen to any of the press conferences from the coaches that have been going on, it's been interesting because they are laser focused on developing players into what they need at this level. Laser focused. They know what they did to succeed at Belmont and other places and want to translate that to a higher talent level here. Will that work? Can they do it? Those are questions we'll find out. But I'm going to tell you this, and I don't think I need to tell you this, but I'm going to say it. If K-State goes to the Elite Eight in his first year, let's all slow down. Let's just calm down and see what's going to happen. But it's been a breath of fresh air. There's not much drama going on. There's no drama going on. And everyone on the staff is really likable. I'll just put it that way about the previous staff. Thanks for the question, Cat and Kahlo. Let's wrap up with this one from Firebelly Cat. That's not right. That's the wrong question. Now I can't remember what the question was, and I swear I put it in there. In fact, I know I put it in there. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Nope, not going to be able to find it. Oh, man, that makes me mad because I had more time here. What happened? One, two, I had seven questions, only six. I'm telling you what, this is what I've been like for the last few months. My brain ain't working, and it's frustrating. My DD today is on purple lights, and I got some questions about that. But let's wrap this up with this. Kansas State football has relied on a few things for the experience of it. And it's usually because they're good. And the teams are well coached. And the fans are amazing. The students are incredible with amazing seats. And they take advantage of it. They make the opposing sideline a living hell. In a nice way, for the most part. I've seen living hell at TCU and other places where it's batteries and stuff being thrown at your team. It's time to really kind of look at things. And I think the purple lights are a step of that. I love this house we built. I mean, I always thought the song was nice, but it really fits what happened at K-State. And I think that's a tradition to keep. But there's some other things that it's time to amp it up. And I think Butter Music in the stadium. And this was one of the questions, if they're going to have a light show before the fourth quarter. And look, what I saw at BYU two seasons ago, their pre-fourth quarter pageantry, it was stunning. It was incredible. Light show with Cosmo, excuse me, it wasn't Cosmo. This was an actual Simone, I think, banging on a drum. Fire. Whatever works with this culture, with this fan base, I don't think they'll be playing neck like LSU, although that'd be interesting. They're purple. If you get that, thank you. But they need to look at everything. Look at everything. And that's something that I also believe about the finances of the athletic department and how they can try to compete in the short term to close the gap or stop it from widening at the pace it's going to. I don't see them doing that. I don't see them turning over every stone to figure out how to generate more money. I see them hoping that a big donor comes and delivers payday, or the state, or the city, or someone else. It ain't going to happen. It's not. Maybe the state will, but I got to say this. I did a DD on the state needs to look at helping, which I, as you know, I've always been opposed to that, and I still am very uncomfortable with it. But the reality is other states are doing it. We showed the numbers. It's like $50 million Arizona State gets from the state. I don't want that. But I think a, you know, appropriated tax, some kind of sales tax or something could be dedicated. I've mentioned my pet cause, which I bring up way too often. That money could go to those causes. A lot of you are burned out because of the state buying Arrowhead, moving the Chiefs across the state line for a lot of money. As a guy who doesn't like taxes, I thought it was brilliant. Look, the Chiefs being in Kansas and everything going is going to redefine Kansas. Sports are a great marketing tool, period. If you don't get that, I'm sorry, but it's reality. You can say the sky is orange, but it's not. I wish Kansas would double down on it and say, you know what, this area in KCK is going to be a casino zone. We got one. We're going to have four, three. And people will come here, not just for football games or soccer games, matches, and or NASCAR events twice a year. They're going to come and hang out at the casinos. And this whole district is going to be generating tax that will pay that off, the stadium off, and other things. Being creative in how you generate money, whether it's tax or revenue for an athletic department, or running a website in an era of evolving media. A magazine became a website and a magazine, and then just a website, and here we are. Thanks for watching, everyone. I felt good. This felt good. This felt nice. Still mad about that last question. Why can't I do things right, Ryan Gilbert? Why can't I get it right? Folks, you can't believe the number of mistakes I've made with photos and stuff. I'm going downhill fast, but at least I'm on the move.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production.